This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, they call me Mark Dolan, and this is Mark Dolan eats the news. Let's get cracking. My car's on a meter. And speaking of cars, Vauxhall are considering recalling up to a million Safira models as they have a glitch that may cause them to catch fire. Many Safira owners are keeping their vehicles in the hope that happens. The President of China has arrived for a state visit to the UK. There are concerns about the ethics of kowtowing to an undemocratic, evil regime with scant regard for human rights. The Chinese President said, "Britain's not that bad." Mr. Cameron has been in negotiations with the Chinese with a menu of concessions he requires from them, including cleaning up their human rights, agreements on low CO2 emissions, and a scaling back of nuclear proliferation. Mr. Cameron tried to make these requests in Chinese, but in the end, he just asked for a number 3, a 17, and a 48. Oscar Pistorius has left prison a day earlier than expected. Great news for his former cellmate, who can now go for a piss in the middle of the night with the door closed. Canada has elected a young, handsome, athletic prime minister called Justin Trudeau. He's now being described as the sexiest politician on the planet. Which makes you think. Perhaps David Cameron's U-turn on child tax credits would be easier to take if he was more fuckable. It's been reported that Britain's jailbirds have been getting high on drugs smuggled in books of all things. Now, I've got to say, that does not surprise me. I read Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code and my body was lifeless for 3 days. The Star Wars trailer is out and it's incredible. The special effects are amazing. It really looks like Harrison Ford's leg is being broken by a falling piece of set. It's quite extraordinary. Disney have promised that they have not altered the tone of the franchise since they bought Lucasfilms for $4 billion in 2012. Although in the latest offering, there are two songs by Tim Rice, Han Solo is played by a parrot, and Darth Vader has larger, cuter eyes. It's been revealed this week that ticketing companies have not been playing by the rules and ripping off their customers. No kidding, really? In other surprising news, Victoria Beckham is a bit skinny and George Osborne has a face you'd like to slap. This is Mark Dolan Eats the News, and with me in the studio to help consume and masticate over the news are the comedians Nick Dixon and Wendy Wason. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Welcome to the radio, the internet. It's FUBAR Radio, the UK's largest online radio station. Don't get a nosebleed.
Ooh.
It's exciting, isn't it?
It's "don't get a nosebleed," the catchphrase.
Yes, it is. And we've had that catchphrase in committee for several weeks now, and I don't think it's right yet.
I like it.
It's fantastic to have you both here. And we'll start with one of the quite remarkable news stories of the week, which is a possible legal action that could be taken for people who go onto a website like Amazon or TripAdvisor and make a fake review. Those particular platforms are now working hard to weed out people who are either mates of an author of a crap book that they're saying is a 5-star, or people who perhaps are running a rival hotel who give their rivals a 1-star review. So it's serious stuff. Now, as comedians, reviews, that's a kind of tender area anyway, isn't it? It's a tender subject.
I don't know. I don't write shows for reviewers. I write shows for audiences, so I kind of like
that's unusual. That's a bit quirky, isn't it, Nick?
Yeah. Have you paid anyone for a good review?
Can you imagine?
Nervous laughter.
Yeah, that was suspicious.
I always say that's the main part
of my budget when I go to Edinburgh.
Two or three grand
just for
fake review.
It's a shocker because I get excited about trying to get the full set of like stars 1 through 5. I'd love to do that. I've only managed to get to a 4-star one.
I am basically paying the school fees of the comedy editor of The Scotsman. I mean, that's the extent to which bribery is. No, the funny thing is that...
The very handsome Mark Dolan, that's how all your reviews start.
Correct. Here's the thing. I mean, I wonder whether what we've got here is this new era of social media and the fact that, you know, the process of reviewing is more democratic now, isn't it? In the old days, you know, a restaurant would be reviewed by some bloke from the Evening Standard or the Times or whatever, whereas now you just go to an app that will give you honest customer reviews, and it's the same with TripAdvisor for hotels.
Like TripAdvisor for restaurants and all that.
And restaurants, yeah. And those things. But I wonder whether what we've got here is the kind of teething problems of these new platforms whereby the trust is now in question. Hitherto, you just assume that these are all honest reviews, yeah. And now they've got to kind of get their house in order.
So now you have to review the reviewers before you actually take on board what they've said.
Yeah.
I'd like to see an Edinburgh show that does review reviews.
I think there is one.
I have seen that, yes.
Have you?
I have seen that. I think there was some sort of spoof thing that was created a couple of years ago. I mean, look, the bottom line is it's good news that we have that sort of democratic thing now where if you go and choose a hotel, for example, TripAdvisor I think is amazing. Because
they've got too much power, Mark. My parents, sorry to cut you off on your own show, my parents have a hotel and restaurant, and TripAdvisor, you just need one idiot who is just an obvious idiot who to just give you a bad review and then people believe it.
Really?
But actually, there's no factoring in, what if this guy's just an idiot and wrong? And he gives you a one-star review, that's it.
But isn't the point of reviews, and by the way, isn't it the same for comedians at the Edinburgh Festival and elsewhere, which is what you look for is the kind of trend of reviews. So if somebody at the Edinburgh Fringe gets 3 4-star reviews and a one-star, you know that that's just a grumpy reviewer or it's a bad night.
There's always that one-star. If you go on Amazon, right, which is about... there's always that one-star. If you notice this, they'll be like, 4 stars, 5 stars, amazing product, changed my life. There's always one guy, 1-star, product didn't arrive. Yeah, that's not a review of the product.
Correct.
You've reviewed an experience in your own life. You may as well say, went to the Rolling Stones concert, there was traffic, 1-star. That's not a review. I'm so angry about it. I'm shocked how angry I am. But do you know that thing?
I do. And it's a pain in the bum. And I suppose this is the downside of all of this freedom of people expressing their opinion. This era of interactivity we're in is that we have to listen to a lot of idiots whose opinion is not worth hearing at all.
Did somebody not review Auschwitz and say that it was a really disappointing experience? I mean, someone went on TripAdvisor.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What, because there was no cafe?
I think maybe that was it.
Yeah? We couldn't find it. How about that?
Well, I like the fact that
I'm thinking of lots of jokes and not saying any of them.
This is FUBAR. You've got to say all of them.
Say them all. But $3.25 to leave bogus feedback. I'd do that.
It's an amazing business because, of course, that's the nature of the story. Amazon are to sue more than 1,000 fake reviewers who charge exactly that, £3.25, to leave bogus feedback. A massive lawsuit. They want them to.
That's not a bad income, though, is it?
Well, no, it's quite remarkable.
How many reviews do you reckon you could write a day, Nick?
A lot, because I live in a studio flat on my own, so I could literally do it all day. I'm actually thinking about it now. I mean, while we're deploring this story, I'm going, hang on, this is a serious alternative for you, Nick.
So what, an Edinburgh show costs about $8,500. How many reviews would you have to write?
Gosh, yeah. I mean,
more than 20.
Thousands and thousands. And you'd have a house full of fillishaves and awful other, you know, waffle irons and other such devices that you'd
get
enjoy
so much
using.
Power in the comedy world, like certain websites that already exist. You'd have a massive amount of power if you could write reviews, wouldn't you?
What do you think's preferable though? Because in the good old days, there was an individual at each newspaper who would be in charge of, you know, you'd have a technology editor, a theatre editor,
that's
a comedy
better.
Right? Where there's one person, and of course in America, this is amazing how in the past an individual, for example, the entertainment writer at the LA Times, who could make your career by writing a good review about a concert you've just performed, and or in New York on Broadway, where a bad review and the show closes after a week. Now that era is clearly gone. But what's better, an individual and their opinion, or the public?
I like someone who's interested in the art, but I find quite often I do enjoy reading reviews for other people's shows, because sometimes you get a reviewer for like a little known publication who's clearly almost auditioning for a job at The Guardian by writing, you know, unlike other comedians, and referencing comics that they've already seen to show their vast comedy knowledge, rather than just go, I didn't like it, was shit.
Well, that's the big problem, is that a lot of people go and see shows or review products so that they can get a freebie. And the problem, especially on something like Amazon, is that if a company sends you their products and then you review it, you feel compromised. You can't give it one because they've just sent you a little present, basically.
Or you'll get into hot water over that with them. I've got young... Your kids watched YouTubers?
A little bit, yes, which is a worry.
It is a worry, but the YouTubers do all these sort of what I'd call pointless challenges, but my kids think it's highly entertaining. And they'll like eat cinnamon, and then they'll film themselves eating cinnamon, and then hundreds of other YouTubers do it, and you're literally going, Jesus Christ. But Oreo,
that's so awful,
sent out Oreos to lots of YouTubers, and they created the Oreo challenge and got collared for it, because all these young kids started doing the Oreo challenge, and then they discovered that they, you know, Oreo had sent it to all the YouTubers to bump up the popularity of Oreos.
Bit naughty. With kids going online nearly dying, choking on Oreos.
Yeah, sugar bumps.
I think all that stuff, there's a certain age. You know when you're over the age group, when you just don't understand YouTube videos, like Zoella and stuff. I know I'm too old. I don't even understand it. It's just someone putting on makeup. I mean, that's when I know. Oh,
I don't want to jump to conclusions. I'm not sure it's your target audience. I'm going to say.
I'm not sure it is either. But I watch
until
it anyway.
She decides to go for designer stubble.
We had to watch it for something, advert thing. But yeah, bad. I'm against the democratization of everything. I've just realised. When you're asking me, is it a good thing? My brain's going, no, it's not. We want to get back to one. Philip French in the Observer. I used to like one reviewer who's watched every film in the world ever, and that his opinion matters, and that's it. That's what I want to go back to that.
I think it's a brilliant idea. Got a great tweet in from Steve Emerson, who said, I love a one-star TripAdvisor review that starts with, firstly, the plane was delayed, and on the first day... I know, it's perfect, isn't it? I
told you.
And on the first day, my son got sunburnt. Okay.
One star for my terrible life.
I just wonder whether public opinion is slightly overrated. This is Mark Dolan Eats the News.
Mark Dolan Eats the News on FUBAR Radio.
Okay, let's talk about something a little meatier now, and this is public health, the health of our children. Jamie Oliver has been in Parliament speaking to a parliamentary select committee about a proposed sugar tax. TV chef Jamie Oliver today called for sugar content to be shown in teaspoons on fizzy drinks, as he urged David Cameron to be brave and stand up to junk food bosses. Giving evidence to the Health Select Committee, he said successive governments had let down generations of adults and children by not standing up to big business to improve diet. I don't know. I used to find Jamie Oliver quite annoying, but all of this stuff where he's making the world a better place, it's quite seductive, isn't it, Wendy?
I think he's absolutely right. I think we're going to look at sugar in the same way we look at tobacco and alcohol. But I think asking David Cameron to stand up to these people is difficult, because he can't even stand up to China and Saudi Arabia.
That's a good point.
Terrifying. No, but I think it's really, really bad for us. And you see the effect on kids straight away.
Well, you've got... How many children have you got?
Three.
Okay, three that you know of. No, that doesn't work with women,
no,
does it?
No, because we know exactly what we do
Nick
at
Nixon.
All times.
You haven't got any that you know of.
No.
Look at him passing the buck.
Sorry, Wendy, if it was you that you know of, that would be a medical miracle, wouldn't it?
It would be, yeah. And it'd be quite some drinking binge.
Of course it would. But so you've got three, and do you control... Well, first of all, sugary soft drinks. What's your policy? What's the Wason policy?
The Wason policy is they don't get them, but they get them on holiday. Mm. They only have water as a special treat. They might have apple juice.
Okay.
They only have sweets on a Friday.
Blimey.
You can't win, though, can you? Because if you deny them it, they will then go crazy for it later.
Well,
they'll
really
become heroin addicts in later life. Especially because they're Scottish.
The Wason kids are going to be...
Sorry.
So hang on, I've got a 9-month drunken pregnancy I don't know about. I'm Scottish, I'm an alcoholic, heroin. What else do you want to pin
on
me?
I didn't say Scottish was an insult. You've listed that yourself.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm Scottish.
You're heckling yourself now, Wendy.
Do you know I'm getting it all in before they do? I know what you're thinking. She looks like a rough Lorraine Kelly. No,
It's radio. Doesn't work.
Well, you know.
Google
got
her.
Got great face
Google
on
her.
Radio.
A hot Lorraine Kelly.
I think that it's a great thing. And I think the kids are aware, and because they don't have sweets that often, when they eat too much and feel sick, they know exactly why they're feeling sick.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Have you ever tried to give up sugar yourself? Have you tried to do this? I do.
No.
I agree with the policy, by the way, but I find it's incredibly hard. I gave up sugar once. It was incredibly hard. It took all my energy away. And I also gave up gluten. I don't know if you ever tried to eat gluten-free products. They are a great alternative if it turns out you are allergic to joy. that's what I found when I was eating them. Yeah, very hard to give up sugar, but it is. But you will feel a lot better after you get over the hump.
Yeah, and how long's that hump? Like sort of 6 or 7 years?
I got over it in a few weeks, and then I suddenly had loads of energy. And then, but it was so hard to maintain the diet that I crashed off. I lasted about 3 months on the diet, then I crashed, and I've been binging on sugar for around 9 years now. So it's a pretty hard crash. So
I'm just a bit confused. Like, this whole obsession with our health and our nutrition and all of that. I think about, I was born in 1974, grew up in the 80s, and we did not have water in the 80s. Everything had, any fluid had the word aid at the end of it. Cherryade, orangeade, lemonade, yeah. That's what. I don't remember drinking water. And we were all fine. I mean, we had white bread with preservatives.
That's the same way people go, well, my parents smacked me and I said, I'm fine.
It's true, isn't it? We were, but I think we're not, Wendy and I were in a similar age bracket. I think you're a little younger, Nicholas.
Way younger.
Okay, thanks for that. Been rubbing in. And I think that we grew up in I guess, the 80s, early 90s. And, you know, people just, we had white bread and we had chips and we were fine.
Well, I see what you're saying, but I don't think we were fine. I think recently there have been developments in gut health, and they realise how bad sugar and stuff is on your gut, and that people say mental health, and quite often it's not mental health, it's what you're actually eating.
That's true.
That affects your mood and your diet. That
your because serotonin is produced in the gut.
Exactly. So you don't say when you're nervous about something, you don't say I've got butterflies in my skull. You say it's in your stomach. Well, you put tension, you put nerves, everything goes into your stomach.
Did you have, I mean, you know, we've joked about the Scots and their diet in the past. It's a little bit of the low-hanging
fruit. I eat very cleanly, I'll have you know, my dog.
Did you grow up with a stereotypical Scottish diet or not?
I grew up in Dubai, so I'm going to go for no.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm a well-travelled Scot.
You were having sort of, I don't know, what do they eat in Dubai?
These curries. Spicy Arabic food,
Nice.
Delicious.
A lot of flatbreads.
Lots of flatbread, lots of...
But listen, what I mean is that, of course, you know, we should probably have less sugar and we definitely shouldn't smoke. We should drink less, all those things. But people are going around being their own nutritionist. People are using scientific terms now, like, you know, celiac. They don't even know what it means. People think they've got like a, you know, an allergy to this and an allergy to that. In the old days, they just got on with it, Nick.
Just got on with it, mate. Yeah, I'm on the other side of that. I'm on the side that, no, gluten is quite bad and it does affect you. But
What does it do to you?
I'll admit that celiac is only... It just makes... Well, with me, it just makes me sort of tired and irritable. It's a bit like a weekend with my family. You're right. Celiac's a tiny, tiny percentage. Most people are just vaguely intolerant to stuff, which is different.
To vegans.
So are you with one of these celiac
guys? No, I'm not.
Guys?
No. I just, most things, I can't eat anything.
I like the Alan Carr joke about celiacs, which is in the good old days, they just died.
Yeah, it's harsh but true. But no, yeah, all it happens is we've eaten too much. People are just intolerant to wheat because we've just eaten too much of it. And sugar, we've just got way too much of it, haven't we?
So were you off the sugar now, or are you back on it?
No, I'm definitely on it.
Because that's the problem, isn't it, Wendy? First of all, we get told a different thing every week about what's good for you and what's bad for you. The other thing is we have the detox and then we fall off the wagon.
Well, they think the thing about sugar is they reckon it's like more addictive than heroin because you do want it straight away again. It's like, I mean, I don't know what the time lapse is after you've taken heroin.
You would know.
To want more. I just said I didn't know.
Because you're Scottish, though?
Yeah.
So you know about heroin?
I might have to watch Trainspotting in school myself after watching that documentary again.
Sorry.
I think that sugar is so addictive for you, and I think if limiting it is a really good idea.
Yeah, Jamie Oliver said we need to get medieval on it, which revealed his age, because some people won't get that reference. They're like, well, we're going to stretch people on racks. Because he's making a Pulp Fiction reference, which is, that's quite old now, isn't it?
Well, do you know what, though? It's very topical because they are currently wreckying locations for Trainspotting 2.
Are they?
Yeah. Okay. And Danny Boyle is... they're having a bit of a script workshop with Ewan and the gang. He's put the band back together. It's exciting.
Is it happening in FUBAR Radio right now?
It most certainly is. Danny and Ewan and the rest of... They're actually recreating the heroin scene in the toilets of FUBAR Radio, which is very, very exciting. But so there we are. We think... You ultimately think that a tax is the way to do it. Because the only question about sort of taxing sugary drinks, Nick, is whether it hurts people on a lower income for whom that is a absolutely valid treat to have a lemonade.
Well, I'm torn because I have all sorts of dodgy libertarian views, so I don't like the government doing anything. At the same time, I do think kids should be aware of sugar and we should be against sugar, so I'm torn on it.
But that's not a treat, though. What you need to do is re-educate people to sort of... If you're having a treat, it's not something that's going to ultimately poison your stomach.
Yeah. They should... Always talking about Jamie Oliver's putting sugar spoons on a bottle to represent how much sugar it's got. I think that's probably fine. There's labels on absolutely everything else.
There you go. Well, it turns out, Jamie Oliver, you've got our vote. This is FUBAR Radio.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Yes, indeed. It's 12:19. It's FUBAR Radio. It's Mark Dolan Eats the News in the company of the fantastically brilliant comedians Wendy Wason and Nick Dixon. And we're going to look now at politics, and a couple of big things are happening. First of all, more turmoil for the Prime Minister and the Chancellor, George Osborne, in the debate around tax credits and whether or not the Tories are hurting the very constituency they've previously bigged up, who are the working poor. And also, of course, this week we have the Chinese state visit to the United Kingdom. Is it ethically right for us to kowtow to what, in many people's view, is a pretty nasty regime? Let's get a bit of help on this, OK? We've got the laughs from YouTube. I need some political weight. So with us on the line is top political commentator Mark Thompson. Mark, welcome to FUBAR Radio, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Listen, great to have you on the show. Let's take a look at tax credits. This week, I don't know if Fleet Street are getting hysterical, but they're referring to it in some quarters as, you know, Osborne's poll tax. What do you think?
I don't know if it will end up being seen as his poll tax. Maybe partly because it's not quite affecting the same sort of people that the poll tax affected, and also you've got a situation where the poll tax, it was very, very clear and straightforward. You could easily say, okay, the millionaire in the mansion is paying the same amount of tax as, you know, someone living in a council house, and that just very, very clearly wasn't for tax credits. Are much more complicated,
yeah,
and it's all to do with different thresholds. You know, actually, you know, when you look into it, I mean, I've got a degree in maths, and I've struggled to understand exactly where all these thresholds and tapers and cliff edges and everything are. So it's not something that people can easily grasp. However, having said that, it actually strikes me as being quite similar to, I don't know if you remember, back just as Gordon Brown was finishing being Chancellor, just before he became Prime Minister, he abolished the 10p tax rate. And it feels a little bit like that, in that he just pigheadedly, frankly, refused to recognise that there were going to be lots and lots of people who would be adversely affected by this. And in the end, what Alistair Darling did when he became Chancellor, as a kind of remedial measure, was to change some other thresholds and tax, you know, tax rates in other places, in order to try and compensate some of the losers. And I suspect that's what we'll see happen here. The Prime Minister and the Chancellor have now got so much political capital behind this tax credit change that they can't go back on it, because that would just be politically impossible for them to do now. But I suspect they'll fiddle at the margins with some other things. They'll then claim that they've mitigated it, and they're already using the phrase across the Parliament, 8 out of 10 people will be better off. But what that doesn't take into account is it's only 2015 at the moment. They're talking about the changes that will come in by 2020. Well, someone who's struggling to put food on the table and is choosing between feeding their children and heating their home can't wait 5 years. So it's a tricky predicament, but I suspect that they will find a political way out of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, we are looking at a potential saving, if they were to execute this policy, of, I think it's £12 billion, isn't it? Which is more than the amount of money you'll find down the back of the sofa. It's more than you'll get from so-called interdepartmental efficiencies. It's a stonking amount of cash. Do you really think that he's got the economic wiggle room to find those savings elsewhere, or some of them?
Well, the tax credit changes themselves are about $4.5 billion. The $12 billion is the total amount that he wants to save from the welfare bill over the course of the Parliament. And,
right.
And this is where it all gets a bit tricky, because I think it was withdrawn in the end last night, but there was actually tabled in the House of Lords a rather arcane instrument known as a fatal motion, which actually reminded me of the last time I had a vindaloo happen the day after, or nearly. Maybe I should.
Thank you for that information. Apologies if you're having your lunch early.
I forgot it was lunchtime. But that seems to have been backed off now, because there does seem to be some kind of compromise going on. But the $4.5 billion, that won't be... I mean, whatever compromise George Osborne makes, it won't be anything like that amount of money, because, frankly, he won't be able to find the money from elsewhere, as you point out. So it will probably be a few hundred million, and they'll find some way of moving it from somewhere else. And like I say, it's not going to compensate everyone who's affected by this. But David Cameron and George Osborne are on a really sticky wicket here, because the whole reason that the House of Lords were even contemplating trying to throw this out, I mean, normally the House of Lords would not block something that's been in the manifesto. And Cameron's claiming it was in the manifesto, but all that was in the manifesto was there'll be £12 billion worth of cuts. There was no specifics. That time and again, Tory spokespeople before the election were asked, what are you going to cut? And they refused to answer that question. And so now they don't really have a proper mandate for this, and that's why they're in such a mess. If they'd just been straight before the election, they could point at their manifesto and say, we said we were going to do this, we have the mandate, and it already have been put through by now. So they're sort of reaping what they've sown to an extent.
I guess it sounds like a mini tuition fees in a way. I just wonder whether the other key question, putting a sort of drawing a line under this, Mark, is did Cameron lie when he made an announcement just before the election that he would protect child credit tax? Excuse me, that he would protect child tax credits. Has he done a U-turn or not?
I mean, I personally, you know, looking at it from a kind of what a reasonable person, say a man in the street looking at this, how they would interpret it, I can't really see any other way of interpreting this other than saying, yes, he lied. I mean, you could probably look at the semantics of the precise wording he used if you get very Clinton-esque about it and start, you know, looking at each clause and each subclause and saying, well, hang on a minute, actually. And I think there is a way of spinning it and parsing it where you could say, well, actually, he never quite said that. But really, 90-odd% of the people who saw him on Question Time when he said, I think he said something like, I don't see any need to do that or something. I mean, people who are well-schooled in Westminster speak know that is code for, well, they've left themselves a bit of wriggle room. But really, I think it could end up being seen like tuition fees, because tuition fees affected a lot of young people, and we saw how badly punished the Lib Dems were for that. I'm not necessarily sure he'll pay the same level of political price, but there will be millions of people in this country who would be significantly worse off, and they will feel that he lied to them.
Absolutely. It's an intriguing one. Clearly, it's going to run and run. We also have the state visit of the Chinese Premier to the UK. It's obviously a big deal. And yesterday, the media were widely reporting deals for investment in the UK by the Chinese of around £40 billion. Yeah. We can open up this conversation to Wendy Wason and to Nick Dixon, who are with us in the studio. And we have Mark Thompson on the line. I mean, Mark, what do you think about this? Because this is the ethical dilemma, isn't it? In the one hand, you have the realpolitik, that there's all this investment. On the other hand, a pretty nasty regime.
Yeah, and it is realpolitik, exactly as you say. I mean, I'm reminded of back when New Labour first came in and they promised to have an ethical foreign policy, and they ended up with egg on the face with that, really. I mean, in the end, you know, foreign policy and trade deals with other countries come down to how much money have they got and are they going to invest that money in our country. And in the end, you know, however nasty some of these regimes are, usually a way is found to strike a deal. And I think David Cameron actually ended up in a difficult position a while ago, because he had an official visit from the Dalai Lama, and China were not happy about that. And they've basically diplomatically punished the UK. And I think that what's happening now is part of the rehabilitation. I think Cameron's been a naughty boy. He's learned his lesson. I think he's promised he won't meet the Dalai Lama again privately. And therefore, we saw what happened yesterday. But I thought it was very interesting, actually. I was just reading some of the details of what happened at the banquet. And during the speech that the Chinese Premier made, he used the phrase, "Opportunity may knock just once. Grab it before it slips away." And that almost reminded me a little bit of like something from The Godfather. You know, nice little trade deal you've got. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. He's being pretty blatant about it, I think.
Wait, yeah, Wendy, what do you think?
There was a documentary at the moment. Is it Xi Jinping? Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so, yeah.
Only because my children thought it was hilarious, and I was like, yeah, maybe don't tell him, you think his name's funny. But I just think it's extraordinary that the regime's awful. He's famously not. How's Cameron being a naughty boy by meeting with the Dalai Lama?
Because that's seen as a slap in the face to China, because they don't recognise Tibet's status as such. So it's seen as not a good thing.
The gentlest men in the world, we're getting punished for meeting him.
But of course he's an ideological enemy to the sort of Communist Party in China.
Extraordinary,
isn't he? But I mean, Nick, this is the thing. I know this is quite a weighty area for a stand up comic. But we do have that real fact, isn't it? It's that sort of thing where, in a way, everyone has it. Sometimes you might want to work for somebody and it's a good gig, but then you're thinking, oh, I don't like that company.
What about everyone else? That's what I think is the same thing as the tax credits. Like, poor working Tories voted for the Tories, and then they're upset about the tax cuts. You can, like, well, look at how they treat everyone else around you and see how they're suffering. They're coming for you at some point.
I wouldn't trust my view on it. I originally thought his name was the number 11. I genuinely thought that for a second. So, you know, my view on current affairs is dodgy. My favourite fact was that apparently the Chinese are obsessed with going to a fish and chip shop while they're here. Because that's how you can tell when there's a good fish and chip shop, by how many Chinese people they're eating in there. There's a little joke there, guys.
I liked it.
Thank you. That's my...
But there's the same day that they announced the closure of steel plants in the UK, they strike a deal with China. That's going to sort of... That's rubbing salt in the wound.
The thing is, all of this will fall on deaf ears in Westminster, won't they, Mark? Because I'm just looking at the figures here for the level of Chinese investment in UK infrastructure. So EDF Energy has reached an agreement with China General Nuclear Power Corporation for a nuclear power plant at Hinkley Point in Somerset. And the Chinese contribution will be... £6 billion. I think that gives them and the French a stake of around 30% of the business. So, at a time when we're being told that the coffer is empty, that really, you know, we're on a terribly tight budget for all sorts of investment, bringing it in from abroad is obviously, you know, when it comes to the bottom line, it's a no-brainer, isn't it?
It is. But at the same time, what we're seeing here is that the reason why the deal's been struck in the way it has been is because Osborne has guaranteed for, I think, about 30 years after the power station goes into production, a price for electricity that is about triple where the price of electricity is at the moment. Now, you could argue that by the time the power plant comes online in, you know, 10, 15 years, however long it takes to build, and then over the course of those 30 years, that maybe that will be a reasonable price. But that's a bit of a gamble, and it actually strikes me very much like some of these PFI deals that we've seen, where the private investors have got a very, very good deal. And because Osborne hasn't really got any money to invest in this himself, he's having to take external investment, and you know, these external investors are using that leverage to leverage a very, very good long-term deal. So I'm not sure it is good for the country, and I think personally we'd be better off actually investing in this stuff up front ourselves and borrowing. We've got incredibly low interest rates at the moment, It would be better if we owned our own infrastructure. And frankly, I mean, I don't want to get all tinfoil hat about this, but I don't like the idea that you've got a regime like China owning such a big stake in one of our key energy infrastructure, and a nuclear infrastructure power plant at that. You know, that makes me feel a bit wibbly.
It's funny in a way how actually really what this whole China investment has clouded the wider issue, which is whether we want to be so dependent on nuclear energy.
Well, yeah, no, that just seems to be a given now. And also, I think there was an interesting moment when Evan Davis on Newsnight a few nights ago was interviewing the Chinese ambassador to the UK, and he asked the question, would China allow the UK to own key infrastructure? And the ambassador, he sort of dismissed, he refused to answer a hypothetical question. He's obviously been watching our ministers. But let's face it, the answer is no way, never, no. It's just he wouldn't say that, you know, as if they'd allow us to do the reciprocal. So you know, we're putting ourselves in a bit of a dodgy position, I think, here for the long term.
I think we are. Now, Mark, before we let you go, I want to ask you how Jeremy Corbyn's doing. It's been a few weeks now. The dust has settled. The novelty's worn off. The honeymoon period is over. Yeah. Where does he stand? All you hear is about acrimony behind the scenes, terrible division within the Labour Party. How long has he got?
I think he's probably got a lot longer than most people think, because it's difficult to see a plausible path to getting rid of him. And it almost feels like Groundhog Day here, because we're in this position with Gordon Brown. I mean, I think a lot of people in the Labour Party knew he wasn't going to be able to win the election, and yet no way was ever found to get rid of him. Ed Miliband, by about the middle of last Parliament, it was seen as pretty clear that he was a drag on his party. I mean, okay, right up to the end, they thought he still could win, but it was only ever going to be just falling over the line, even if he was able to do that, and it was unlikely he was going to get a majority, and yet again, no way was found to be able to get rid of him. The problem they've got with Corbyn is that the mandate that he got, 59.5%, I mean, he won on the first round. I mean, frankly, if they tried to get rid of him, all that would happen is he'd stand again and he'd win again, because the composition of the grassroots members of the Labour Party are now far more to the left than they were even 6 months ago.
But has the resignation of Warner done anything about that? I mean, Lord Warner, has that had any impact?
No, I don't think that will have any impact. I mean, frankly, that's fish and chip paper.
Really?
By now. I don't think most people care about that. And there may be a few the people of the Blairite tendency in the House of Lords, and maybe even one or two MPs who will abandon ship and go elsewhere. But I don't think Corbyn will really care about that. So I think it's going to be very difficult to get rid of him. Even if somehow he got sick of it and stood down, all that would happen is another left-winger, maybe John McDonnell or Diane Abbott, someone like that, would stand. And again, because of the way that the membership of the party has changed, they would probably win. So I think what needs to happen for, you know, Corbyn and people of the left to be ousted from the leadership position is for basically him or someone very like him to face a general election and be absolutely annihilated, and then basically they'd be back to where they were in 1983. But, you know, the lessons that they learned back in the 80s and early 90s, they'd have to learn all over again. I mean, I personally can't see how he can possibly win a general election, because he's trying to win over, you know, his stated ambition is to try and win over people who didn't vote at the last election. But any way you look at this, from the polling and from a kind of cephalogical, you know, kind of political analysis perspective, they can't win him an election. He needs to win over the swing voters in the marginal constituencies, and they're not going to vote for him because they're terrified of him. You know, they read the Daily Mail and the, you know, the newspapers that are painting him as a communist and a, you know, potential...
they're painting, you know, him as a communist, and David Cameron's doing a deal with China.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. No one ever said politics was fair, Wendy.
It's not. I'm going to interpret your answer, your very considered answer, Mark, as David Miliband back in 2019 to rescue the whole party and sweep to power. But listen, we really enjoyed having you on the show. Mark's fantastic website is markreckons.blogspot.co.uk, and his Twitter handle is @MarkReckons, one of the most compelling political commentators out there. Mark, thanks for joining us on Mark Dolan Eats the News. We look forward to catching up soon.
Cheers. Thank you.
Fantastic stuff. Now, our elite team of producers here, Nat and Will, put their heads together for an appropriate song. Of course, it is the Chinese state visit to the United Kingdom. So how's about a bit of Tipau? We'll be back shortly to discuss pornography and Hugh Hefner. Ah, this takes me back. Doesn't take Wendy back. She does. She was not even born then.
It was a fly on the wings of the young girl's dreams that grew to
It's not over. This is the thing. Gives every DJ a heart attack, that bit. I'm not a DJ, let's not get carried away. Goes without saying, my guests on Mark Dolan Eats the News, their hands are swaying in the air. Nick Dixon, do you even know that song?
I've heard it. I'm not as young as I pretended to be earlier.
All right, listen, let's sort it out. What age bracket are you in?
Well, I mean, you know, if in comedy terms, I'm just coming up to 28.
Right.
But my real age is not that. I always think I should pretend.
Your stage age is coming up to 28.
Well, I think I've never managed to really pretend, but everyone tells me I look like I'm in my. Some people say late 20s, some people say mid 20s even. So why admit that I'm so much older? I'll admit it on this show and hope that no
and
one
on
listens.
And on the radio, you can be 20 forever.
That's true. But
you've got a 20 year old.
You
voice.
Seem younger as well, that you all seem younger. I would never have guessed any of you.
It's the light.
Ages.
I'm 60.
Never.
In France, women lie up. You know, in the UK, people lie down about their age and they want to sort of do it. But in France, women like 40 year old women go, I'm 45, just so they can get the, oh, you don't look 45. You look amazing for your age. Thank you.
Do people do it with weight as well? Do you sort of say, oh, I'm a size 16 and really, like, actually you're a size 14? And I think it's quite clever. It's like managing expectations.
Well, there's
it?
An argument over whether it's better to say you're older but you look younger than that, or just say you're younger and get away with it. Some people say it's better to say you're older, and they go, oh, you don't look that old, and that's better. So I don't know what the real win is. I just know that whenever I'm talking to the young people, sometimes after the gigs, I suddenly drop a reference, and I go, oh, don't say that, Nick, because it's made me look very old.
That's one of the hardest things I find doing comedy these days is with younger audiences. I mean, at the beginning of this show, I made a joke saying, we better hurry up because my car's on a meter. You don't have meters anymore.
Does anyone know
what that means?
I think
my
everyone knows that.
My 12 years younger than me, so I think he sort of keeps me. We had a lovely moment because I'm always the old one, and we were talking about latitude and to a friend's daughter who's 15, and she mentioned this band, and Stephen went, oh, that's great. And she went, have you heard of them? And it's the first time he's ever been the old one in the room. I was like, yes.
Yes, that is a great moment. Now, speaking of the old one in the room, let's talk about Hugh Hefner.
God.
Because a big moment, really, for... I suppose for women on the planet in 2015 is the relative decline of Playboy magazine, certainly in terms of sales, but also an announcement this week that they are no longer going to have nude models in the magazine. Now, obviously, this reflects the fact that basically that brand as a hard copy magazine thing that you buy in your local corner shop, that's over. But is it good news for women?
What is going to be in the magazine? Just the hardcore journalism?
Rabbits. Just actual
rabbits. I think Crossword, which was what always attracted me to that publication, they've got the meanest Sudoku. Some of those positions are impossible.
Hey.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
I like the fact that nudity is passé. They're just like, yeah, whatever. The stuff you can see on the internet is just so horrendous.
I thought you were going to say so much better. That's what my brain was just thinking. Yeah.
Dixon's got a different angle to that.
I think Playboy disappoints people that are into pornography because you don't see much, and disappoint people that are not into pornography because you see too much.
Now, in the old days, pornography, those girly magazines, as they were called.
Why do you call them girly magazines? They're not girly.
Far from it. Or mucky. These mucky magazines that you used to get in the newsagent. They were on the top shelf, weren't they?
Yeah.
There was a time when...
You're very tall, so that was fine for you.
Yeah. That was perfect.
That's why you grew. It's like giraffes.
Correct. Natural selection, yeah.
That's why I pubesced at the age of seven.
If you want it enough, the genes will adapt. Nature finds a way.
But of course you've got, and this is another retro thing that our younger listeners will not know about, which is the Top Shelf magazine. And, you know, there was a time when W.H. Smith had a special guard over the pictures just so that you couldn't be offended by accidentally seeing it. I've got to say, isn't this an example, Wendy, of be careful what you wish for? Because those magazines were sort of reviled by the sort of, you know, by many in the feminist community. Now, you look back at those pictures of a naked lady lying seductively, it's like the good old days. Compared, as you say, no, compared to online.
No, because in pornography, women out-earn their male counterparts in a spectacular fashion. Women are in control in pornography. I have an issue with pornography because I think there's a real issue in schools at the moment between, like, this is going to be a bit grim for radio, between, like, 13 and 18-year-olds of rectal issues. Because,
really?
Yeah, yeah. It's a real problem because when I was at school, it'd be like kissing... kissing on the mouth, kissing with tongues,
maybe that a bit was a
of,
big moment.
Of heavy petting below the waist.
I haven't done that yet.
And then maybe sex. Whereas now it's kissing with tongues, blowjobs, sex, anal.
Right.
And
what pornography is doing is pornography is sort of adulterating our attitudes towards sex and also guiding our behaviour.
Yeah, so girls don't know what they can say no to and boys don't really know what they can expect from a girl.
At my school, all the girls said no to me, full stop. So that's my experience of that.
But
you were just listing things you did at school. I was like, that's amazing. I wish this is why I'm a comedian. Carry on.
Those girly magazines, in some way, or the Mucky, that, in a way, looking back on it, compared to what's online, that wasn't pornography at all.
I never bought any of those. Did you buy them?
Of course.
Oh, really?
Look at me. I'm a red-blooded man.
Because you've got to go in and actually really talk to a real person,
no,
haven't
I
you?
I don't think I did. What I used to do is, I did used to buy pornography, only so that I could hide the fact that inside was a copy of the Sun newspaper.
I said I would dash the Geographic.
Yeah, but I mean, it's that's my thing, is that, you know, it is the end of an era, obviously, and I wonder whether it just makes you realise that in those days...
You're trying to say it's relatively innocent.
It was stills, wasn't it? It was stills, and it was quite innocent compared to what's out there now.
But then I think that if you were looking for pornography, you find it. The problem with Playboy is if you were not looking for it, you do still occasionally find it.
Yeah.
So at least, I mean, I do like that thing when on porn sites when it says, "Caution: Do not proceed unless you're over 18 years of age." Are you 18 years of age? Click yes.
And they're
click
like,
no.
"Damn!"
Like any self-respecting 13-year-old's going to go, "Ah, they got me."
Well, the thing is, that's the question about pornography online now. The horse has bolted, hasn't it? By the way, that's not an adult movie. The concern I've got is that this thing, the genie's out of the lamp. It can't be controlled
that
anymore,
is one.
Can it? If anyone knows, Nick Dixon knows.
True, studio flatmate on my own. Carry on.
just saying.
So yeah. You're saying that you think it's a good thing that Playboy is over, you think it's a bad thing that Playboy is over?
Well, I just wonder whether you realise that it's the end of a more innocent time for the depiction of people in a sexual context.
I just think it's woman's blade open for anyone to see, so I don't know. I don't know how innocent a time that is.
Yeah. It's funny also, isn't it, how magazines and newspapers are moving away from this exploitation, because of course the Sun famously have quietly dropped page 3. Playboy aren't going to have nudity, and yet online it's outrageous. It's curious how, when it comes to the hard copy, it is getting cleaner.
Much banned, isn't it? Nuts magazine got pretty much banned from the shelves. But no one actually buys magazines anyway now, do they? They're sort of front. They're sort of for the publishing. I don't know. They make their money elsewhere, is what I've heard.
I like. There's a magazine called Grazia that I like, which is a bit newsy, very light on news, if I'm honest. But fashion and makeup, I like the actual holding a magazine and reading it, and I also get National Geographic delivered because I am really boring.
That's nicely done. Hugh Hefner, by the way, is also rather in decline as well. At the age of 89, story in the Mail Online, squalor of the Playboy mansion. Hugh Hefner, 89, lives in a decaying house of damp rooms and stained mattresses where there are more nurses than bunny girls. It was once known as the capital of louche living, where scantily clad women frolicked with rich men and celebrities, all overseen by the eccentric millionaire Hugh Hefner. But now, according to British glamour model Carla Howe, the Playboy Mansion's glory days are long gone, with visitors more likely to see nurses instead of lingerie-clad beauties wandering the grounds.
Is Carla just a bit confused? I mean, lingerie-clad beauties in nurses' outfits... No?
It's a very fine line, isn't it?
Do you remember the story? This was years and years ago when a journalist sort of took photographs of Buckingham Palace and everyone was appalled that the Queen kept her breakfast cereal in Tupperware.
Yeah.
I remember everyone brilliant. Being really shocked because it wasn't in like gold, silver, or in silver salvers. And you're kind of like, well, he's an old man. What?
Yeah, it's not that shocking that an 89-year-old hanging out with a load of young girls is not a utopia. Do you know what I mean? I don't think anyone thought it was
what
awesome.
What I'm curious about is how on earth Operation U-Tree haven't caught up with Hugh Hefner. I mean, this
because he's totally out in the open. Yeah. He's not actually doing anything wrong.
It's not in the UK. It's out of their jurisdiction.
Yeah. And they're old enough as well. And he's just like, this is who I am. Yeah. And also, by the way, Carla, she was a bit naive. She wrote that all the mattresses were stained. Like, who knew? And then she put... And the sheet... This is an actual quote she put. And the sheets were past their best, too, in the Playboy Mansion. Who would have thought that it wasn't all...
Because the one thing you go to in the Playboy Mansion is the pristine sheets.
Exactly, you want the clean sheets.
In a full stop to this conversation, today's Express, there's a headline, a third of young women look at porn every week. One in three young women regularly view porn, with many watching it on their smartphone. Is that going to clean up pornography, just a female audience?
No, but then I tell you, my issue with porn is when it's used as an instructional guide. I think porn is fantasy is fine in the context of a look. What are you laughing at?
Just the idea is used as an instructional guide, like in the workplace or something. I wasn't sure what you meant, but I did. I knew what you meant. Yeah, it's still funny.
but I don't think it's cleaning up porn. As I said before, the only two industries where women out earn men are modelling and pornography. So.
I made that argument
top,
the other day. They are sort of businesswomen in a way who are smashing it. But then someone said to me the other day, yes, but they're all sort of damaged and that's the only reason they're in it. So that when I made that argument, they came back with that.
Well, how do you can't speak for all porn actresses saying they're damaged?
Someone did the other day.
And you go, as a woman, they're all damaged.
Yeah, someone said to me, no, but they don't really want to be there. I said they do. They're businesswomen. They're young businesswomen, and they're earning money. They're doing really well. And someone said to me, no, but it's only because they're damaged in their childhood.
I wouldn't dare sort of put myself as the mouthpiece for all porn actresses, but I don't know if it's your first career choice. But if you're, but I've seen a discussion between a porn actress and a porn actor with him going. Which her going, well, you can do this, and you can kiss me here, and you can do that, but I don't want this, I don't want that. And he has, and he, bizarrely, in America, I did a short film with Rowan Jeremy.
Okay, short, was it? That's unusual.
I didn't know. I came home and I said, the director's asked me if I've got any problem working with a guy called Ron Jeremy. And he was like, oh my God, what is this? He's moving into comedy, but I didn't know who he was.
So you're old, should have got that reference.
I wasn't familiar
you
with
missed the reference.
That's because I've no access to the internet when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And how was Ron? Perfect gentleman?
He was perfect gentleman. He said he wanted to kiss me in one scene, and I said, Ron, everyone will expect that of you. I think it'll be funnier if you maybe just stroke my cheek or lick my nose. And he went, yeah, that's a good point. But phew.
I like it. Good to know that on that bombshell, Ron Jeremy is a team player. Okay, we're going from porn to bling next.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Yes, indeed, it is Mark Dolan eats the news with you on FUBAR Radio, the UK's largest ad-free online radio station. And this week, Bernie Eccleston, the F1 billionaire, celebrated his 85th birthday, and he celebrated in style. His daughter, Tamara Eccleston, turned his London mansion into a Swiss chalet. Yes, indeed. The house itself is worth £70 million. And they made it look exactly like the family's other property, which is a £23 million chalet in Gstaad, Switzerland. I'm assuming the reason why they couldn't just go to Switzerland is maybe all of those tickets for Ryanair and EasyJet had gone. You know when you go on the EasyJet website and it goes, there's one more seat at this price, and that that they couldn't afford, obviously. Here's my question to you. We've seen it with the Kardashians, with their wedding, the incredible bling that's going on there. We also have a story that Taylor Swift earned £1 million a day last year. Are we just a bit over bling? In these very unequal times, are stories like this unpalatable and distasteful?
It was a very odd choice, wasn't it, to make it... Why would you make your £70 million home look like your £23 million? You've just knocked off £47 million. You imagine if you had decorators at your house and said, yeah, mate, we've made it look £47 million worse.
They had fake snow and everything.
Yeah, it was a Swiss chalet, so it's probably a neutral decor. Guys, yay. Neutral. Is this on? Cheers, you can have that one. That's amazing. They're trying to recreate Switzerland. My theory, and I don't want to be libelous, it's only a hypothetical idea. Did you ever see this? There was once a Mission Impossible episode on the original series where they recreated a guy's house. So he thought he was in his own room, but he wasn't for some reason. I can't remember why they were doing it. Right. They were trying to recreate Switzerland. I reckon Bernie's 85, right? I reckon they're trying to make him think he's in Switzerland So if anyone does like a sort of major crime, he'll be like, well, as you know, I was in Switzerland with Tamara at the time, and he thinks he was in Switzerland. See what I mean?
I wonder whether they...
I thought you were going for a suicide gag. That's there.
Oh, really? No, no, no. Oh, no, it was more imagined than that.
You don't have aged parents.
Damn it, I didn't think of that one. No, why are they trying to make it look like Switzerland? So that wasn't quite explained.
Happy birth, happy death day.
Oh, I see.
You.
Okay.
Yes. There are a lot of...
He's a very rich man, Nick. Very rich. But they're not skin either.
No, I mean, they're obviously a very wealthy family, and he's a very accomplished businessman. It's no problem. But are sort of examples of extreme wealth like this, you know, unpalatable with oligarchs and their yachts and all the rest of it? Is it just... I mean, it's obviously a symptom of our times, isn't it? But I just wonder whether it's...
You want to see people doing something with it, don't you? Like Bill Gates, they said to him, why don't you do anything with your money? When he had millions, he said, I'm going to wait till I've got billions, because that's when you can affect real change. They're saying Taylor Swift's going to be a billionaire when she's 30. So I'm wondering if then she'll start like curing malaria and such at that point.
I certainly hope so. On that philanthropic note, I would like to thank my wonderful guests, Wendy Wason, Nick Dixon. What are your Twitter handles, my lovely friends?
Mine's at Wendy_Wason. So follow me for some just inane chat.
Yeah, I'm at Nick Dixon with two X's because someone had stolen my actual name. He's just an egg. He never posted. So at Nick Dixon, two X's.
Isn't it always the way? Thank you for listening to Mark Dolan Eats News. We're back with more news. Many thanks to Will Brazier and Natalie King, who produced the show. See you soon. We're going to play out with a little David Bowie, China Girl, to make the president feel welcome.
Excited.